Over the past few weeks, we've been working our way through a sermon series entitled Disciples 101. We've been looking at kind of some essentials of who we are as members of the Christian church, disciples of Christ, and beliefs we hold up, things that are kind of part of our DNA as disciples. And this morning we continue that series by looking at the open table. It was May 1809 in Glasgow, Scotland. The anti-burgher Seceder Presbyterian Church was one of the main churches there in Glasgow. The first two parts of that church's name identified the stance of that particular church in some theological controversies of the day, but it also had to be awfully hard to fit all of that on a church sign. But the church was preparing to hold its semi-annual communion service. The service was usually held just two or three times a year, so this was a special occasion. And in the weeks prior to the service, the minister and the elders of the church began visiting the members of the church for a very specific purpose. This wasn't a social call. Instead, they would visit to test each member and determine whether they were worthy to receive a small metal token which would allow them to receive communion at that service. If they determined you had a sin problem in your life or you hadn't been a member in good standing, then you would not be given a token. If you weren't approved, you were banned from participating in communion in the service. The stated goal of this practice was to protect the Lord's table from being profaned by people considered unfaithful. We can't just have anyone sharing in communion. It will cheapen and defile it, was the general thought behind that. And of course, the definitions of who was worthy was fairly subjective, and the reality was there wasn't a single person coming to the table who didn't wrestle with sin and who didn't need grace and forgiveness. But they viewed this token system as helping them guard the sanctity of the communion table in time, which they felt was their duty. These tokens themselves were a big deal. Some people even requested that when they died, they wanted to be buried with their token, hoping it would serve as some kind of ticket or pass into heaven. Those deemed unworthy of one would be often labeled heretics, and their salvation would be questioned. This was a fairly standard practice for many churches in Scotland and other areas during that time. And a man by the name of Alexander Campbell was one of the members of that particular congregation in Glasgow. You might recognize his name as being one of the founders of our own denomination if you were here for that story a few weeks ago. May 1809 was just a few months before Alexander would immigrate to America. The ministers and elders visited him and determined him to be worthy to receive a communion token. But Campbell was struggling with the whole thing. The process seemed judgmental and divisive. He had friends who had a passion for reforming the church that were deemed unworthy because all of their beliefs didn't fall in line with the church's preferred views. But observing communion was important to him as well. This was a meaningful time of worship and remembrance for him. And the time came for the actual communion service, and Campbell and the others were present for the service, each of them holding their little token with them. And it was common at this particular service at that church at that time for there to be close to 700 people at this service. And the communion table, the communion table themselves were blocked off at the front of the sanctuary, and people would come forward to be seated around them a few at a time. And because of the sheer number of people, this process would often take a good part of the day. And Campbell, as he sat there in that service, was still struggling with what to do, observe communion as usual or protest out of his concerns for the entire process. So he hung back, hoping to come to some sort of peace over his inner conflict. But his time came, and he found himself seated at the table, still conflicted, still wrestling. The plate was passed around the table in which each person would place their token in it to ensure that each person there had been found worthy and that no one was profaning the communion table. And the plate made its way to Campbell, and it said that he threw his token into the plate in an effort to indicate his disapproval of the entire process. And when the bread and the cup were passed, Campbell loudly refused them, got up from the table, and left the church as an act of protest at this effort to restrict the table and determine who was in and who was out. Alexander Campbell decided that part of his own efforts to reform the church would be the practice of an open communion table. It shouldn't be surprising, with this story of one of our denomination's founders in mind, that one of the key parts of who we are as disciples is the practice of open communion. One of our statements of belief is this: the Lord's Supper or communion is celebrated in weekly worship. It is open to all who believe in Jesus Christ. There are no tokens to obtain admittance, no exams to pass, no theological checklists you have to sign off on. Now, sharing a meal together isn't something that's unique to our denomination or even Christianity in general. Meals throughout history have been a time where people have come together and shared food, and in the process, they've been brought closer together. Meals at their best can also be a time to slow down and to savor both food and the company of all those gathered around the table. And meals are often found in Scripture too. In the cultures of both the Old and the New Testaments, sharing a meal with someone was a big deal. It wasn't just a matter of physically sharing food and space. It was a social event that bound you together and also essentially said to everyone, "These are my kind of people." This is the main reason why Jesus got in trouble with many of the religious leaders of his day, because he was sharing meals with people they labeled as sinners. And on the last night before he would be arrested and crucified, Jesus gathers and shares a meal with his closest friends and followers. We remember this meal each time we ourselves come to the table. And our disciples of Christ founders, including Alexander Campbell, thought it very important that the church as a whole reclaim the importance of communion and time at the table and worship. So they emphasized observing and sharing communion every week. And because unity in the larger church was so important to them, they also emphasized that everyone who believed in Jesus was welcome at the table, regardless of which denomination they belonged to or their particular theological beliefs on certain issues. As I mentioned before, Jesus got in trouble because of the kinds of people with whom he would share meals. He ate with the religious leaders and the movers and shakers, but also those that many labeled sinners and outcasts. And when he gathered with his friends and his followers for that meal on the night before his crucifixion, he gathered with people from all kinds of economic and social and political backgrounds. He gathered with people who were following him but didn't always get it right. One of them would betray him, and they would all turn and run later that night when things got difficult, deserting him in such a difficult time. Over and over again, Jesus shares meals with others and essentially says of all of them, "These are my kinds of people." That's why you will often hear me and others in this place say, "This is Jesus' table, and at Jesus' table, everyone has a place. Everyone has a seat." To come to this table and share in the bread and the cup that reminds us of the depths and the lengths of Jesus' love for us. You don't need a token. You don't need to pass a test. You don't even have to be a member of this particular church or this particular denomination. You don't have to have it all figured out. You don't have to have rock solid faith. You don't have to look like everyone else or believe like everyone else. You just have to be hungry. You just have to be curious. You just have to be willing to take a chance that maybe even in ways you don't expect or fully understand, that you're going to encounter Jesus, even in a little piece of bread and a little cup of juice, and in time sharing them with other people. The late Rachel Held Evans was a writer who, much like myself, grew up in a background where the Lord's Supper was only observed occasionally throughout the year, and there were certain rules and expectations as to who could take part in communion. And also, much like me, she would later discover the power of regularly gathering at the table each and every week, and gathering at a table where all are welcome. And in her book, Searching for Sunday, she writes about the communion table, and she gives the beautiful words that you can find on the cover of your bulletin this morning. "This is what God's kingdom is like," a bunch of outcasts and oddballs gathered at a table, not because they are rich or worthy or good, but because they are hungry, because they said yes. And there's always room for more. Sarah Miles, another author, shares in her book, Take This Bread, of how she found herself at a low point in her life, and she wandered into the back of a worship service one day. She didn't consider herself a particularly religious person, but in that service, a time of communion was offered at the end with an invitation for anyone who wanted to participate. And Sarah shared that in that time of communion, she shared in that time of communion, and she found it so meaningful and powerful that she returned the next several Sundays, still sitting in the back, still not sure of what she believed, but experiencing in the bread and the cup each week a feeling of love and acceptance that she couldn't explain or deny. Sarah would eventually choose to follow Jesus, and in many ways, she practiced her way into belief by experiencing the love of God at the table. Of being reminded there that even if she wasn't sure if she believed in God, that God believed in her. That's why my own view of the open communion table always goes beyond even the statement I read earlier. I believe that communion is open to all who believe in Jesus Christ, as the statement says, regardless of their denomination or church membership or theological beliefs. But my own statement goes beyond that. I hold that all who want to share in communion are welcome, regardless of what they do or don't believe, because some, like Sarah Miles, might come to experience the love of God in a very tangible way through sharing the bread and the cup with others. At Christ's table, all are welcome. And there's another side of the reality of the open table, too. When we make it open to all who will come, we have the expectation that we will have good table manners toward others at the table as well, even those we may not always like or personally agree with or approve of. And at the same time, we also expect that while all people are welcome, any stances or efforts to reject the worth and the value and the place of others at the table has no place. We uphold and protect the place that all have at the table. No exceptions. And we expect that if we'll let it, this time at the table each week can transform how we live and how we love and how we view others and how we live in community. We expect that the love of God transforms us through our time at the table, even if that most often happens in slow and subtle ways. We're transformed into people who are more like Jesus, the one that we remember as we gather at the table each week. About a week ago, a new supergroup of women involved in country music, calling themselves the High Women, released an album that included a song entitled Crowded Table. And as I heard this song and its lyrics, I couldn't help but think of the communion table and the place that we all have there. Part of those lyrics go like this. If we want a garden, we're going to have to sow the seed. Plant a little happiness, let the roots run deep. And if it's love that we give, then it's love that we reap. Yeah, I want a house with a crowded table, in a place by the fire for everyone. The door is always open. Your picture is on my wall. Everyone's a little broken, and everyone belongs. Yeah, everyone belongs. I want a house with a crowded table. Everyone belongs at this table. So this essential part of our identity and our DNA as disciples is this open communion table. And this can serve us well as we seek to be Christ's faithful church in an ever-changing world. We'll explore this further next week, but the table can be one of the few remaining places that brings us together in an increasingly fragmented and divided world. And there are plenty of people who are curious about God and who want to experience the love and grace of Jesus, but have been told they need to meet some checklist or expectations or beliefs before they can do so. But we, as disciples, if we'll choose to, can proclaim, you can find the love and grace of Jesus here at the table, and at the table, there's a place for everyone, for me, for you. No fine print, no qualifications, except that you're hungry. So let's extend this invitation, this welcome, to everyone. Everyone. And let's invite them to pull up a chair next to us, because there's always room for more. Amen.